Brian Hefty from the DNR. How you doing, sir?
If I were to become a park ranger for the Wisconsin DNR, is it frowned upon if I share a story about the time I fought off a bear with a nail clippers?
We'd give you a special program if you have a story like that. So. I think that would attract people.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the noon hour of our Monday, March 27th show. And we are just marching straight along, and we were joking that it's very nice out.
It is, it's beautiful.
After having so much snow on Saturday. We're back to at least having some sunshine today, which is always nice. And so about earlier this month, because we're still in March, the Craig Yabuki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic celebrated its first year. And in that first year, they treated nearly 1,000 children.
Wow.
Which is excellent. As you know, I feel like the recurring, it is the year of mental health. And we talked some about it last week of what it's dominating the news as far as what's going on with kids and mental health and how do we get them the resources and the help that they need. So here to talk about the success and what's been working over at the Craig Yabuki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic is Tammy McLoof, who is the manager of the Craig Yabuki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic. Welcome to the show, Tammy. What do you call it for short?
We just call it the walk-in clinic.
The walk-in clinic.
Otherwise, it is a mouthful. It is. That's a lot to say.
Yeah. And so I was like, I'm going to say it twice, and then for the rest of the segment, we're just going to call it the clinic, the walk-in clinic.
Yes.
So exactly. Welcome to the show, Tammy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And so I guess for people, I mean, it's a little self-explanatory in the name, but for people who are unfamiliar with the walk-in clinic, what is it and why is it unique in Wisconsin?
Okay. So we are a mental health walk-in clinic, and we are at the Children's Hospital location, and we are open from 3 to 9:30 every day, so including the weekends. And we are here for kids from the ages of 5 to 18 that are experiencing a mental health crisis. So it could be, you know, something that has to do with school. It could be suicidal thoughts. It could be panic attacks. It could be behavioral problems. So if a child or a family is struggling with a mental health crisis and they choose what the crisis is, we're not saying it's not a crisis or it is a crisis, they can come to our clinic and receive some help. And so the cool thing about this is that we are the first mental health walk-in clinic here in Wisconsin. You know, there's urgent care for medical needs, but there is not like an urgent care for mental health needs.
And because I know, I mean, really, and correct me if I'm wrong, because the other kind of like on-call mental health resource that we have, we now have 988, which is the text or call mm-hmm. line, and there's a chat associated with that. But because we talked last week, we had a guest who is 22. So he was talking about the access mm-hmm. to mental health and some of it coming back to the shortage of just not having enough people. And so often people are faced with like these long wait times until they can finally see someone. And so really what I understand is this is kind of at least in the triage portion of just trying to get someone help as quickly as they can is something that the walk-in clinic is really helping with.
Yeah. And we have kids that come in that are hooked up with the mental health system. And then we have families that this is their first touch with the mental health system. So, I mean, when families come in, you know, if they have services, we will provide an intervention for them. If they do not like have any mental health services, we're going to hook them up with some resources. We're going to give them an intervention, which the intervention could be safety planning. If they're coming in and they have some self-harm thoughts or they're feeling suicidal, it could also be teaching them coping strategies and kind of what's normal behavior, what's not normal behavior, and some psychoeducation on mental health. So, I mean, we're here. Otherwise, many times these families would either be on wait lists, not receiving services, or they would end up in the emergency department. And that's not really a good place if you're in a mental health crisis to wait hours in the emergency department. And you don't get an intervention. So that's the one thing that's really nice here is that you're able to talk to somebody and you're able to just have a mental health session with them.
And so this sounds like something that, because right now it's for 5 to 18, right? Mm-hmm. The age group.
Yeah.
This just sounds like something that could also be helpful for a lot of different ages. And so I guess with the origin of starting this and starting the walk-in clinic, obviously there's like a lot of resources that had to go into it. And so as far as testing out this model, because it sounds like it's been successful for its first year, as far as, is this something that I feel like could be proved out to replicate for kids across the state, but then also having this available for adults as well. And like you said, like urgent care is like when you have an infection and you don't know what it is and you need some antibiotics immediately versus I need help right now and I need to go talk to someone. And so is there an appetite or conversations around how you guys can take the model that you guys have started and do it in other places or for more people?
Yeah, we are definitely, that is part of our plan is to open up a few more walk-in clinics in different areas, because like Northern Wisconsin, there's not a lot of resources out there. So would this be a successful clinic to have up there? Because there's a need. There's also down in Kenosha in the Racine area, that's also been a need. And then, also looking in the Eau Claire area. And so a variety of different Wisconsin areas, we are looking at how can we help these families, because we have a lot of families that are coming from the Racine Kenosha area. We have some that are coming more up by Sheboygan and the Fond du Lac area. And then we have some that are coming from the Madison area. And so it would be really nice to have a clinic in their backyard rather than having to drive a ways to get this resource.
We're talking to Tammy McClough, who is the manager at the Craig Yabuki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic. And so as far as being a walk-in clinic versus putting more resources into like telehealth, do you see a big difference as far as people being able to talk to someone in person versus getting them connected virtually to someone?
We have decided to be in person. I mean, we've been talking back and forth as far as telehealth, but I think when families are in crisis, it's just nice to like see somebody and to be there and just to get that need met there. And I mean, we've seen an increase in school issues and school problems, and I think some of that might be because kids are on telehealth and they're not connected. Mm. And there is a value of face-to-face intervention. So we've really wanted to stick with being in person because there are other crisis lines. And I think that they're wonderful and great and they may meet a need for the family. But for the families that we see, we feel like that face-to-face being in our clinic and, spending the time that way is the best for them.
No, and I think, we are social creatures, right? And ultimately, I was just watching something as far as sometimes the beauty of living in sometimes denser areas. We're in downtown Waukesha, where if you walk around, like you see people, and it's little, it's little interactions with another human that you maybe individually don't mean much, but just acknowledging and having those exchanges with people in real life, like it does make a difference versus being isolated and just seeing people on a screen.
Tammy, I'm curious. I'm curious.
Yeah, it also helps us with. Sorry
about that. I'm curious if you could share some of. I'm curious about how social media is affecting our kids' mental health. Does that come up a lot with your patients?
It does. It comes up a lot. It's been very interesting because our average age, like since we started, has been age 12. And so that's the middle school age. And there's been a lot of bullying. There's just been a lot of stuff that's happening on social media and obviously with COVID and school stuff. And, we've seen a lot of kids that have really struggled with bullying and that type of struggles with social media.
Because I think this is, I feel like from a media aspect, there's a lot of theorizing on what it is, right? Of like with the increase in the headlines over the last month, as far as kind of the crisis, especially young women are in. And is it social media? Is it doomerism, as we talked about last week, of just kind of this consuming too much information on the state of the world, versus, you know, also just more kids having language also to talk about their mental health that maybe generations before didn't really have access to that language. Have you heard that at all, as far as just more kids being more open to talk about anxiety and depression than maybe generations in the past?
Yeah, and I know like children's, we've been really working on stigma and eliminating the stigma of mental health. So I think that contributes also to kids talking about their struggles, talking about issues, and then families wanting to get help and support.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with the couple minutes we have left, I just want to remind everyone of the resources that are available. And so if you could remind us who can go, when they can go, and any online resources that they can, you can direct them to.
Okay, so we are the Craigie Boogie Mental Health Walk-In Clinic, and we are on the Children's main campus. We are open 7 days a week from 3 to 9:30, and kids ages 5 to 18 are welcome to come, and it's giving kids the right care at the right time at the right place. And if you feel that you cannot wait until the next day with a mental health need, feel free to come on by.
Well, thank you so much for your work. Tammy McClough is the manager of the Craigie Boogie Mental Health Walk-In Clinic. We will put all that information on our show notes for today for you to save it, share it, whatever you need to do. And again, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you for inviting me. Have a good day.
You too. All right. When we come back, a little bit more voting because we didn't get to squeeze this in. But there's some misinformation going around at certain locations in Wisconsin as far as disabled voters and that they can get help with their absentee ballots. So we will discuss that when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there. And I know. What friends are supposed to do, oh yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You can count on me, 'cause I can count on you.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And coming up in the next segment, Luann Bird is going to be here.
Our friend.
Bird is the word.
Yeah.
And so she has been busy despite she was running for the 84th District Assembly seat against Bob Donovan last fall, which was the last time we spoke to her. But since she started a podcast that actually is sponsored by Civic Media. And so we'll talk a little bit about that, but also as far as her activism goes towards, you know, disability accessibility, there's a new fight that she is fighting as far as the Hills Corner Library and trying to get it to be compliant with ADA rules. And so we're going to be talking to her about that and, you know, in general, maybe having, as I think the tagline for her Bird on a Wire podcast is conversations about hope, civility, and what's the last one? So we'll have a conversation like that.
she's a lovely person.
And action. Hope, civility, and action.
I like it.
I like it. And so before that, though, I saw this come in on Friday, and basically in Wisconsin, there are some disabled voters who are saying that local election leaders across Wisconsin are not following federal law. So obviously, this is a point of contention as far as what has happened in our court system when it came to early voting and ballot boxes. And for those of us who are not disabled, can no longer have anyone return our absentee ballot for us. We have to return it ourselves. But that is not the case, according to federal law, for voters who are disabled. Right. And so absentee ballots and who can return them has been this political flashpoint for a while in Wisconsin. But challenges to the laws and practices in at least 8 states that make it difficult or impossible for people with certain disabilities to vote have come up in the last 2 years. And basically, people with disabilities filed a federal lawsuit in response to the Wisconsin's court decision saying that federal law allows them to get assistance in returning their ballot. And a federal court ruled in their favor in August. So they now can get help. Now, well, apparently that information did not make it to all of the local election clerks.
How is that even possible?
What does a fancy Brian say? It's not always malintent so much as incompetence. Is like the assumption is that some, because when we've talked to Lana Kropp, like when you have such a decentralized election system,
right? Things get missed, I guess.
Maybe things get missed. I want to believe it's more of, and I don't. The word incompetence feels really. Because I also want to like respect election workers and how much they have to do, and not assume that they're
right
acting
in bad faith.
In bad faith, but in the lead up to the April 4th Supreme Court election and during the early voting that began Tuesday last week, local election officials are not following the law, and that there are certain advocates who are disabled are alleging, and so absentee ballots were mailed to voters earlier this month. And early in-person voting using absentee ballots began last Tuesday. And so now the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which oversees the state's more than 1,800 local election officials, first started alerting clerks in September to the federal court ruling, reiterating that disabled voters can have assistance returning absentee ballots. And so unclear of how many people have been turned away.
Right.
I didn't see, comes from Scott Bauer of AP News that I was reading this. I didn't see any numbers as far as how many people this has affected, but maybe now that there is some attention on this, no more people will be turned away. But it goes back to, because this was the same issue when we talked to Democrats abroad, when they were talking about the struggle for people who were trying to vote while living abroad, that this law of no one else can return your absentee ballot causes for them is that each one, you can't just stick absentee ballots in one
envelope
and send it overseas. The cost and the expense of sending your ballot individually back is on you, the voter.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, and same thing. And it's like if you have a signed witness, I don't know. And so this obviously is just adding more red tape and potentially disenfranchising people, because certain election officials did or did not get the memo, either didn't get the memo or didn't receive the memo or didn't like mentally receive the memo. And so I don't know if this is a developing story as far as how to, for the people who've already been told that they couldn't get help, to make sure that their vote is going to count. But it just goes to another law that makes it harder, not easier, for people to vote. And I realize that the law says they can vote, but by questioning it at all, you're disenfranchising some people, because people just assume, well, are you disabled enough to fall under
this category?
So, all right. Well, when we come back, Bird is the word. Luann Bird is back. We're going to be talking about her most recent fight, we'll say, to get the Hales Corner Library up to date when it comes to accessibility, and also talk a little bit about her Bird on a Wire podcast. So stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we were listening. We didn't get to the lyrics, but that soothing music to bring us back was a song written by Chris Porterfield for Luann Bird called Bird on a Wire.
Yes, it was. Actually, it was a song he had written in 2011, but it was like, now it's for me.
So it wasn't for
it
you
wasn't
originally.
It wasn't released yet, no. And there is really no words to it, no lyrics.
Oh, there
isn't
any lyrics to it.
It's just music for the podcast. Isn't that awesome?
Oh,
so it's the lead-in and the lead-out music to
the
podcast.
So it wasn't something for the...
Well, it turned out to be for this, but it was written in 2011.
So
he didn't write it this year. It was really a kind donation on his part.
Yeah. So that is the voice of Luann Bird. Bird is the word. She is back. We haven't talked to her since her, revolutionary, some might say, campaign that she ran in the fall for the 84th District against Bob Donovan. Came in second, but not without a lot of heart and conversations about civility then, and you have not stopped since that race?
No, because 49%
is a lot of votes.
So I feel like I carry that number on my shoulder and saying, okay, Bob, here's what the people in the 84th district said, and here's what they want, here's what we want. So we're just keeping our advocacy going, only in a different way.
Which is great. And actually, I saw that you posted on Facebook that you went to Bob Donovan's listening session.
I did.
And you got a selfie with him?
I did.
And so was he receptive?
Yes. Well, good. He has to be. He's my representative. Let's look at it that way. Do you know how hard it was to go to that very first swearing in when he won? But I'm like, no, he's my representative, and I need to stay in involved for the people in my district.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And so, speaking of the people in your district, I think you emailed this to us a week or two ago. That, obviously, I mean, really some of your activism and your involvement started with when your husband became disabled and learning so much about the ADA and like being ADA compliant and everything. And lo and behold, in your backyard, it sounds like the Hales Corner Library is not fully up to date with where it needs to be with being ADA compliant.
I was so surprised when I first got here and went to my very first wine tasting at the library. I was serving on the school board at the time, and I really care about my community. So wherever I live, I like to get involved and serve. So I go to that wine tasting. I noticed right away that there was no elevator and there's no way, and it's designed to be on two levels and it's not wheelchair accessible. I thought, well, okay, it's grownups. I'm on the school board, and the schools aren't wheelchair accessible completely either. Okay. So we had, I was working on issues there for a while, but then they had a listening session. They were looking at upgrading the library. So I attended that to be that voice for people with disabilities. And I spoke up at those things and said, hey, we do need to fix this building. I'm aware that it's not in compliant with the ADA. Phil was paralyzed 8 days before the ADA was signed into law. So he gets, so this is like July 18th and July 26th, they signed that law. We get out of the hospital, he does, a couple months later. And so everywhere we went were barriers.
Yeah.
And we along with everybody that had the barriers, we all had to learn together how to make this work. We had to ask because it's a complaint-driven law. It's not like there's police out there that are going around checking places. It's up to us that live with it to make the requests to get them upgraded. But originally, they were required to have a plan in place for, you know, when they were, how and when any organization, any public building was going to become accessible. Somehow, the Hales Corners Library never got that memo. I don't know.
Because, and correct me if I'm wrong. So, as far as I understand with ADA compliance, it's basically, there's a certain amount of businesses that are grandfathered in. Until they do renovations, isn't that?
No.
There's absolutely no. So how does it work as far as, like... Because once that was passed, it wasn't like every single building you needed to get.
Right.
It was like there was turnover, right, as far as when things were getting updated?
There's no grandfathering. There is there's a process, though. Okay. They were given time to get their buildings and things upgraded. That's how it's written.
Okay.
And there's also a hardship clause. So if that little local corner business, if they can't even put an elevator in, they couldn't afford it. Those people are really exempt under the law. The law is written in a reasonable way, Kristen, but a lot of people think, well, there's got to be grandfathering, so they don't have to. Grandfathering would say that the ADA law was passed, but you don't have to provide access to people with disabilities if you don't want to. Well, that's, or you can wait till you upgrade your buildings. Well, that's not the way the law works.
Oh, I thought it was the latter.
No, they are supposed to remove the barriers immediately for people with disabilities. So the exemption, there's no exemption really, but what I've done in 30 years is, you know, worked with people, worked over time, worked with committees to get these buildings fixed. And by the way, there's two really ways to describe it. People are to remove the facility barriers, which is where bathrooms and water fountains and desk areas are all getting in and out of the building and parking, and all those barriers are removed for a person with a disability, be it hearing, vision, whatever, wheelchair access, all of those are to have been addressed. They're all laid out in the law specifically. So that's the facility side. There's also a program side. So you have to remove any barrier to a program. So, for example, we had an attorney that had a business office on the second floor, and he didn't need to fix the building to serve us. He would just meet us somewhere. But he provided the program access. Mm-hmm. And that's the way the law works. And we've been reasonable. I've only filed complaints twice in our whole time. And that was actually early on, right after when people said, no, we're not going to fix it. Well, then we went to the Department of Justice. You file a complaint and they have to do it. And that's how the law works. So, you know, spin forward, we move here and I see that there's some issues with the library. I thought, oh, great, I'll get involved, make those needs known because not everybody knows. Like you said in your prior segment, we hope that it's ignorance, but sometimes people just don't share our values.
Yeah.
So I got involved and I'm just going to make, this is where you could talk a whole hour. But once I got involved, I was finally, had to get off the school board and was asked to chair the Friends of the Library. And as chair of the Friends of the Library, that's when I saw, oh my gosh, the children's programs are held on two levels, just like the wine tasting. And so if a child's in a wheelchair and it's February and they had the program downstairs, the cake upstairs. So a child in a wheelchair would have to, or the mom would have to load them in their chair and drive all the way around to the upper level. Both levels are accessible from the outside. And they have hung their hat on that this building is in compliance with the law because you can get into both entrances.
Okay.
But that's not acceptable under the ADA laws. The barriers that places on parents of kids with disabilities, of elderly people to have to go all that far and go all the way around to get into the other level is just not acceptable under the law. They're not in compliance with the ADA, but I have heard that since the minute I got involved in this, and I heard it from one person specifically, and that is Village President Dan Besson. So they had done a study on the ADA of the building in 1994. Then some of the modifications were made, but not exactly up to spec, but they moved some things around, so they figured a wheelchair could get into the bathrooms now, but it's not up to spec. Okay, so there were some modifications made back then. Then they did another six-year study, which President Besson at the time was just, you know, village board member, served on. 6 years they studied the building. at the end of that, they said in the report that this building has issues. It needs to be fixed and upgraded, and there were some accessibility issues. It didn't exactly say ADA compliant at the at that time. But at the end of that, the committee recommended an architect. So you spin forward. Instead of an architect, they hire another consultant. And now this is when that second consultant study was done, which is another 2 years. That's when I was asked to be president of the Friends and started investigating all of this stuff. Like, wait, this isn't right. This isn't right. So that's when I found out. And then they asked me to serve on a so the director of the library was trying to get the facility fixed. So she asks me to serve on a committee to look at the fundraising side. Is it feasible to raise money, private dollars, for this library? Mm-hmm. So I spend a year of my time. In the meantime, I step down from the Friends because I'm totally in disagreement with how they're running the programs there. Mm-hmm. And accommodations could have been made. Their Christmas tree lighting, their Dr. Seuss, their summer, every program they ran for kids was really in violation of the laws. And so, but they were unwilling to change that. So I'm like, okay, I need to step down here and continue to work with getting the facility upgraded, because that's really reasonable to me. If it takes years, I don't care. As long as they say, okay, we got a problem and we're going to fix it. But I never heard that from Dan Besson. And then he becomes the village president. And so we had the library board working on this. We had our little facility committee working on this. And then it was time to, we had to stop our work because we needed an architectural drawing, which is what the very first 6 year study said. So now we're at the same place. You can't go out and ask for money. You need to know what you're asking for. And we didn't. So then it was up to the director to raise $50,000 for an architect, because the village board was not going to pay for that. So, you know, I could see the conflict between the director and Dan Besson. It was just going nowhere. So I stepped back and I thought, well, I'm going to wait, because I heard she's going to retire. So you spin forward. She retires. They hire a new director. Dan Besson became the president a couple years ago. He replaced everybody on the library board and threw out all the work that we had done.
Wow.
So that's how one person who doesn't agree with your values, and I can tell you lots of conversations I've had with him, and the minute he would, toward the end, see me, he would say, that building is in compliance with the ADA. And I just would ignore that and say, look, now they've got maintenance issues. So now's the time. I'm like, this is the reasonable time. You've got maintenance issues. Let's fix that building. So then I thought they were going to work on this last spring. I went to... There's a lot of details. I meet with candidates for the village. I take them to the library. I show them what's going on there. You know, I'm trying to get this library fixed. So this is death by study, if you ask me. Death. It's like the tranquilization of gradualization leaves people out. You know, and people kept buying into that. They still do. They buy into, well, people can go outside and go around. It's okay. You don't have to. We can't afford a $100,000 elevator.
Well, we're talking to Luann Bird. We're going to talk about a lot of different things. But right now we're talking about the Hales Corners Public Library and the brigade that she's on right now to get it up to code with the ADA and be ADA compliant. And so I guess, is that the pushback of saying that there's just not the money, despite the effort that was put in to try to understand what it would even cost to raise outside private funds? Is that the pushback? Or I guess I don't understand, like, what is the argument you get beyond them just being complacent, saying that it's compliant?
That's the argument. They don't want to admit that they are in violation of a law. They don't want to believe that all this time they have been discriminating against persons with disabilities. And everybody involved has a hand in this, not just the village president. But he has convinced all of the village board members that this is it's okay. The library, and then he'll say the library has to wait its turn. They know they have to fix the building now because it has some maintenance issues. It needs a new boiler. It needs roof. It's got leakage. So there are issues now, major issues, which, by the way, were cited in the 6 year study. I mean, there was like, they knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. So he just doesn't believe that there's a problem. And if it's only one person asking, we don't need to fix it.
Is it only one person asking?
It's not just one person. Okay. I have a very good friend, Eileen Velitis, who has spoken with me at the board meeting. Her son went to school with a kid who was in a wheelchair, and so she was aware of the challenges too. I also have some other friends now that are elderly, and they just have trouble getting up and down those stairs.
Yeah.
So now what they've done, let's go back then to, so I thought they were going to go to referendum this spring. And then in November, December, they kicked it out. They said, oh my gosh, we need new fire. We need firefighters and police. We can't do the library. And that's when I got really mad.
And so that's when you filed a complaint. So we're going to go to break now. And we'll talk a little bit more about the complaint when we come back. But also, I want to make sure we have some time to talk about your podcast, which is sponsored by Civic Media. So our guest is Luann Bird. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Luann Bird. And so I want to wrap up, because we could probably just talk to you all day, but I want to wrap up on the where we are right now with the Hales Corner, Hales Corner's public library. So you filed a complaint.
I did in December.
So what happens now?
And then in January, I got a letter saying that the Department of Justice, they kick it off to the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, is opening an investigation. And for all of these things listed, I fell off my chair onto the floor like I had just won a five mile race. You know, it's just like, finally someone's going to help me do something about this. So that's ongoing now. And I continue to just show up at meetings. And tonight there's one in case anyone's interested in helping or showing up, or just send me your information so I can tell the stories when I go about people that need access and encourage them to remove the barriers now and not wait another year. So,
well, I also think, you know, I think something that a lot of people don't realize is that if you live long enough, almost everyone becomes disabled.
Yeah, we're all only temporarily
right?
able-bodied.
As far it's as true. Like, as you get older, you need a cane and steps
yep.
get harder.
That's
or you,
right.
And, like, and it's just getting around becomes yep. harder. And so, you know, there is obviously, like, I'm always sensitive to this because I had an uncle, I mean, I had a cousin who had muscular dystrophy.
Yeah.
I have a cousin who has spina bifida. But, you know, so it's like, and watching my families of both on both sides, like, parking and concerts and just trying to live a normal life. And so it is important to have people like you who are advocating for the things that a lot of us just take for granted because we can get around easily.
Well, but the point is you don't have trouble as much. You don't have hardly any trouble today compared to 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So for to run into a community like Hales Corners where the leadership seems to be a barrier is totally unacceptable, which leads me to what we're doing now. You know, when I lost that election and we came so close, Dan Schaefer and I had a conversation about it. We all felt so bad. And he's like, why don't you just continue the conversations? Because that is where we're going to change things. It's mm-hmm. kind of like almost like one person at a time, talking to people, pulling people together. And he said, well, why don't you start a podcast? Well, I said, I don't know how to do that. I know how to talk. He says, well, I know how to do the podcast thing. And then we reached out. You know, the idea of hope and civility and action and tying that all together so that we can really continue to build that coalition to save democracy. And I personally love to get people past their little fears and their little, like, I don't know if I can do this. Let's take action thing, because that's what it's going to take. And I've seen, so through the podcast series, so we started interviewing some people. I recently interviewed Dr. Catherine Wilkinson because she came out and knocked on doors with me. She's a trauma surgeon and is now at St. Luke's. She wants gun legislation passed. She contacted me after the election, and we are continuing to have meetings with Bob Donovan to try to get legislation passed on gun safety locks that would save lives. And then that little five-year-old died just a few short weeks ago mm-hmm. in Milwaukee, and we sent an email off to Bob, and we went to his listening session. I did, you know, and so continuing to work on these legislative issues and talk about it. And the interesting thing is what, you know, Catherine, we had this podcast conversation. What? How did you get involved? Why did you get involved? What has it meant? And that's the kind of conversation we want to keep going.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the cool stuff that is still going on in my life with knocking on doors for Chris Porterfield, who is running for school board now, knocking on doors for Janet Protasiewicz, because that segues right into, I am extremely worried that we are, not only do we, are we losing voting rights, which you talked about before, it really, really struck a chord with Phil and I when they had to go through the ADA again just to get voting rights for people with disabilities. Strikes a chord with me. And so we've got women's rights, voting rights, we've got environmental issues, right? We've got so many the unfair maps, things to work on. So I've been knocking on doors almost from the beginning for Janet Protasiewicz to help her get elected so we can flip the court and keep the rights we have, hopefully, in the future, because they're going to come for disability rights as well. They're going to find reasons to make it harder to vote. They're going to find reasons to protect businesses over the rights of individuals if we're not careful. So the podcasts are another way just to keep those conversations going.
And so who else are some of the other people you've interviewed for the podcast?
Well, we're going to interview my two grandma friends because we had canvassing with the grandmas and talk about the activism we're doing as grandparents, you know, for our schools and for the bigger issues that we've got going on. We've interviewed Sarah Godlewski because she endorsed my campaign and talked about all the good work she's doing. And then she became our Secretary of State. So those are just a few of the other ones. I'd like to bring in some people I met at the doors and talk with them about what that experience was like. And now I'm toying with this. I think we need to do a training video on how to talk at doors with people, because that's a challenge.
That's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
It is.
And I think, because I don't know on any given election how many people, obviously, I probably see a disproportionate amount just because of the people I've met through my work as far as how many people knock doors. But I don't think it's like, it can't be a huge number. And that includes people on the left and the right that are out there knocking doors. And so I think, because I think it's intimidating for a lot of people to go up and talk to strangers and be able to just bridge those conversations. But then everyone I talk to who actually does it says how unbelievably rewarding it is to actually, because it goes back to what we said before of actually talking to people instead of texting
or yelling
or commenting on a TikTok.
I had a guy yesterday when we knocked and he said, he opened the door and I said, have you decided who you're voting for yet for Supreme Court? No, I haven't. And I said,
you found an undecided voter.
Yeah, we did. And I said, well, what is it you care about? You know, what is it that you're looking at? And he said, no, I don't want to get in an argument about this. I said, no. It's going to be okay. So I started with that question, though. What is it you care about? And that led to a beautiful conversation we had about Janet. I have met Janet. I've been to some of her events. I know stories about how she decided her cases. And by the time we left that door, we had that vote.
Oh, wow.
So helping other people learn the art of that. It isn't about what you tell them, but listen, what is it they care about? And then how do you turn that into a canvas question then? Well, here and then using your personal stories and what you care about, but you got to show up. You know, you got to go. So show up at one of these meet and greets. Get to know the candidates that are out there. And then the Dr. Wilkinson challenged me when we were doing the podcast, which you'll get to hear. It'll be out in a couple weeks.
I was
going to
say, can people listen to it already?
Oh, not yet. It'll be out
not
in a couple
that one,
weeks.
But the first two are out,
yeah, the first
right?
two are out. Absolutely.
Where can they find that?
They're on my website. They're on the recombobulation area, which is Dan Schaefer's website. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where it houses on Civic Media, but I'm sure you can get
all
to
right.
it through Civic Media.
Well, we'll get
Media
all the links and make sure we link it to today's show so people can find it.
So, yeah, we have to, you know, she challenged me. She said, Luann, I said, not everybody can knock doors. And she said, are you kidding? Yes, they can. That's from a constituent who came out and knocked doors for me, who had never done that, had never met a candidate until she met me. And she hadn't even met me. Her husband was at the door. And then her husband told her about me. And then she sent me a big check. And then she came out and knocked doors.
And then she was on your podcast.
Let's leave it at that. Right? There's hope.
There is always hope. Yes, we could. Eventually, we'll get me out there. But after this week, we got a break for a little while until we get a reprieve for the rest of the year. But Luann Bird, it is always a delight. We'll have to have
Thank you
on you. More regularly.
Thank
you. Because you are a ray of sunshine and hope and civility and all of those things. So thank you for joining us.
The conversation's going. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, the Midwest Gaming Classic is back, and Andy Nelson is here to talk about it. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.